Season 3 of Ricardo's Rules of Resilience podcast is brought to you by Triple R Nutrition. Triple R Nutrition offers you top-of-the-line supplements while supporting a worthy cause. Triple R Nutrition is partnered with Wired and Vision in El Salvador, so part of their proceeds go towards helping support their mission in El Salvador. So you can make sure that you're maximizing your potential while supporting a worthy cause. Go check them out.
That's right. Ricardo's Rules of Resilience. Tune in, people. Every episode is impactful. You become more burly just by listening. Let's go.
Welcome, everybody, to the Ricardo's Rules of Resilience podcast, the podcast where we give you the tools to withstand and recover from difficult times. I'm your co-host, Coach Alton, along with Coach Ricardo, and today you guys are bringing you part two. It was so good we had to break it up into two parts for you guys with Miss Amber Kivett today. Thank you for coming on again today. Super pumped to dive even deeper into your story and all that you do for people. So we'll get right into it.
Thank you. Greatness elevates greatness. So it's a wonderful part to be able to contribute with you guys. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, Amber, the last time we were together, we had just got to a point where you had told us, we had talked about the sum of the many things that you have withstood and overcome, recovered from in your life, your own resilience. And you alluded to the fact that success and happiness are not necessarily tied together. You can have success without happiness. You were even sharing a little bit about in your own life how you had experienced success without the happiness, and that had led to some painful experiences for you. One of the things that it led you to do in that pain was to make some decisions about your faith. And certainly not all, but many of our listeners are people of faith. And so we don't shy away from that topic on this podcast, as you know. So would you just share with our listeners what that brought you to in your own faith walk?
Absolutely. So I think we ended our last episode is success is getting what you want, and happiness is actually experienced by enjoying what you get. I thought I had to have the house and the money and the husband and the children and the career. And I didn't realize until I had filed for divorce and had moved out on my own and had a lot of conversations quietly with God that I was always trying to chase happiness and love in the love language that I wasn't getting at home. And I was with him for a total of 27 years. He knew my love language was words of affirmation. And I, in so many ways, kind of begged for that kind of attention and never got it. So I went looking for that love elsewhere when really I didn't need anybody to love me the way that I thought I needed to be loved. I just needed to pour my faith into God and to Jesus because I'm already loved enough there, and let that force and that energy be able to fill the void in my heart that I wasn't experiencing in my own marriage. So I ended up in having a lot of very deep conversations with the Lord at home. I didn't start reading the Bible for the first time in my life until April. And I've had a Bible in years past, but when I was in my teenage years, I had a Bible called the Rainbow Bible, and I went to youth group and I went to church and I got baptized when I was 13 on Mother's Day. But I was also sexually molested by family members from starting at the age of 10 until I was, 13, 14. And I remember going to youth group and talking about sex in the Bible. And it was that Rainbow Bible that I wrote down some notes and how angry I was with all this trauma I had been through. So I still have that Bible, but I refuse to open it because the notes are there and it doesn't really excite me, or I don't look forward to it because I've already done the trauma therapy. But there's an association with pain in that Bible because I went through pain and I couldn't understand why I was going through it. I was gang raped in high school at the age of 15. And by three guys over a 12-hour period, and I attempted suicide my senior year of high school. I didn't start living until I got a full opportunity to go to Purdue, and that's when I hit the reset button, and that's where I found sports medicine and exercise science. And I was a chemistry major for 2 years, so I was there for a total of six. And I've been through a lot of trauma in my adult life, and my ex-husband was able to witness 27 years of trauma in itself. And I really thought I was really codependent on him, because there for a while, he actually made the comment that he made me. I was just a nobody from my town, and he needed You know, he was my fixer-upper. And I don't know that he knew how to handle the success that I achieved starting with the pandemic. But there was something that Todd Durkins taught me about 10 years ago. The two most important days of your life is the day you're born and the day you figure out why God put you here. And that's your purpose. And what I want your listeners to know is purpose is not who we are. It's not what we do. Purpose is what happens to other people when we do what we do. And that can be a variety of different things. And our purpose is constantly changing. So for me, I don't think my ex realized that I was capable of being strong enough to leave and that I was not dependent on him taking care of me as a provider. And instead of being a partner and instead of loving me and like providing along with me the way that I asked that I needed to fill that because of my history, I was constantly told, like, you have to forget your trauma. You have to leave your trauma in the past. Like, you keep talking about your stories. But Todd Durkin teaches, live a life worth telling a story about. And so that's how I'm able to connect with so many of my clients and so many people who are perfect strangers on YouTube is sharing my story and then being me being vulnerable and transparent to showing people my bad days and proving that I am still a human. I still have permission to make choices that don't lead to desirable outcomes. I don't call it failing because I learned from some of those decisions what not to do ever again because I have to live with myself. And I've made some decisions and that have led to consequences for a while yet to come. But that's, you know, with choices that we make, we get two things. We get a reward and a consequence with every choice we make. And whatever is instant, the delayed is usually compounded. And so, and that flows on into the next reaction. And so our body and our spirit is always reshaping, regenerating, changing hormonally, emotionally, spiritually based on our experience. So you can't just bury the past. You can't just sweep the trauma under the rug. You can't just be what we would call normal because normal doesn't exist, in my opinion. If we were to go to another part of the country where it's normal to do what has happened to me, like you just fit in. And that's kind of how I was for a long time until I experienced a different level of quote unquote normalcy in a nuclear family in which everything is honky dory great and there is no stress or trauma. But that's not how I grew up. So it was really hard to acclimate into somebody's life who didn't understand trauma. So when I realized I was having these conversations with God, that I was really codependent on my marriage because I thought I was supposed to be, because I had to be, and that was the only way I was going to be happy or successful. But when I realized that I had a gift to serve others and heal others through their own pain by the seeds that the Lord had planted in me through my own physical and emotional recovery, that's when I realized, okay, like when somebody calls, God is putting them on my doorstep for a reason. I can't turn that away. And so I was prioritizing servant leadership. But when you're married to somebody who doesn't understand that that's your purpose and that's very real, it created a lot of headbutting and a lot of negative energy. And so he was very supporting of my journey in the way that he was available to hang out with our daughter and was talking about how awesome I am to other people. But he forgot to celebrate me as who I am as a spiritual being. And not being who he married as first and last name. I still have a spirit inside of me, but we couldn't celebrate that together, which is what led to the disconnect. I remember, so I went through a very short term, about 3 or 4 weeks, and had an emotional affair that led to a physical affair for just a few weeks. And that individual actually threatened to kill me. And crazy enough, he actually died 2 weeks ago. Overdose. I didn't know that that's what I was dealing with when I started interacting with him on an emotional level. But when my ex-husband asked me how somebody so smart, so personable, somebody who coaches so many people, who does the mental work with so many people, who heals so many people, who knows right from wrong, how can somebody like me do something so stupid and so destructive? Like, how does that happen? And so I did the work. And I started being very authentic and vulnerable and transparent and just put it out there because I'm holding myself accountable. It's not a fail. I learned what not to do ever again. And I learned what got me into that situation. And it comes down to I strayed away from my faith and I depended on a man to make me happy by telling me that I was loved instead of knowing that God and Jesus loved me all along. And I let that diversion and that loneliness consume me. Because I was exhausted from giving so much energy to so many people. I had nobody to fill me up, but I didn't need anybody to fill me up. I just needed to turn to God to do all that for me and to put the right people in my life as a support circle to be able to do that for me. And that's how you and I met, was a coincidence is a miracle in which God chooses to remain anonymous. That was the turning point of me filing for divorce. It was the turning point in me being headstrong and being able to know that I could do whatever I needed to do to find my own happiness. I was already successful. I just needed to be happy within myself, knowing that every single moment that I serve, I'm serving because that's my purpose. That's why God has me here. And when I stop serving for the greater good of other people and for something bigger than myself, that's when temptation sets in and we start diverting into materialistic items or things. We're looking for love in the wrong places, whether it's materials or whether it's lust or whether it's companionship or just comparing ourselves to our past selves or to other things or other people. And that's when I realized that I had to pour my heart much deeper into my faith with God and with Jesus. And that's what I started doing and started reading the Bible for the first time. I listened to 3 sermons every single Sunday, like non-negotiable. And I listen to Christian music every morning when I wake up, and I listen to a podcast or a sermon of years past every single day on my way to work to learn something new. And in order to truly let God carry me and in order to let go, not bury the past, because that is who I am. That's what gives me the power to change so many lives, is using those experiences and being able to connect because I understand it as I've survived it. But being able to wash it all away, through baptism, that was the only way that I could forgive myself for having an affair that only lasted for 4 weeks. That was the only way I could forgive myself and let God carry me from there, because I knew I had already been forgiven. I just had to figure out how I was going to let it go and how not to be so hard on myself, because I was carrying so much shame and so much grief, so much guilt. Because how can somebody like me, after 27 years with the same man that I still love dearly, how could I do that? And it came down to that. The love was gone because there was a totally different connection that, you know, I couldn't receive the love because it wasn't there. It wasn't supposed to be. And I needed to be able to love truly with my faith and through God, and chasing Jesus and chasing God instead of chasing my spouse and trying to figure out how we were going to be able to connect. I was trying to force something that was not possible. And when he told me that I was too hard to love, he actually told me that he felt he had settled. He told me he felt like he could do better. And he told me that I was too hard to love, that I was asking for too much from him and he was done trying. And that absolutely crushed me. And I actually believed that I was too hard to love because I was so codependent on him. I don't need to be dependent on anybody. I just want somebody to share my happiness with. I want to be able to share my servant leadership with, like the athlete that I just worked with for 3.5 hours. I can't wait to call someone special and tell that person how I made a difference in that kid's life. And I couldn't do that with my spouse because he didn't care. He didn't want to hear about it. It made him irritable to hear about how my day had gone and how I was making a difference in the lives of others. And it was never about me. It was about, this is what I'm doing that's bigger than me, that God has given me the ability to do. And this is how we are changing lives together through our faith. And when I was told I couldn't share it anymore, it crushed me. But I felt obligated because I'm not a quitter. I'm all in. I've never quit on myself. I've always gone looking for help. So I've done the trauma therapy with a Christian counselor and then got baptized. I wanted to get baptized on my 20th wedding anniversary, even though it was no longer in existence. It would have been, I fell 2 weeks short of a 20th anniversary, 2 weeks. And I wanted to get baptized on that day because I wanted that to be an anniversary with God. I wanted that to be a memorable date for the rest of my life in a positive light, instead of dreading that date every year going forward. And the church did not allow for baptisms outside of Sundays. So I waited until October and I got it done in October. And I have felt so much peace and so much calming and so much positive light. And I just don't care anymore about who I'm with or how they see me. I will never, ever conform or change myself again for the greater good of somebody else wanting me to be that way, for their greater gain. I will always love myself and I will always love me because I know I'm worth it. And so learning self-worth was probably one of the greatest lessons of this past year, was just knowing that when I see myself in the mirror on my worst day and everybody is judging me because they think they have the right, I still am awesome And I'm still an amazing person because that's how God made me, was to be an image of him. And I was already made to be great. I just had to let her out. And she is out and she is running free.
Yes, exactly. We are more than the sum of our past mistakes. We are more than the leftovers of a life that could have been. We are loved by God despite our failures, and we don't have to justify them. We don't have to excuse them away. God loves us and sent his son to die for us, not because we just needed a little help, but because we were lost and we needed a savior.
I just love how you've done the work in yourself. And it's so easy for us to come on a platform like this and say, like, you got to deal with that trauma and God's working through the hard times in your life. But you've actually lived through some terrible, terrible things that I would not wish upon anybody. And you've done the work, and now you're using it for good. And it's so amazing when that works out that way. It's just so beautiful to see that. And one of the things that Todd talks about, a quote from Pastor Jeremiah, is the crest of the wave determines the depth of the valley. And it's kind of a little bit of the inverse with you, like you're in the deep depths of the valley, and now you're able to turn that, and you just see how big the crest of the wave can get for you. It's just so awesome to see, so motivational and inspiring to see with all that.
So something really cool, there's a book coming out that I'm a co-author of called Coaching Greatness, and I wrote my chapter of that book the day that the judge signed off on the divorce. I was supposed to have submitted the chapter 3 months before that. And I refused to write it until I knew that I was ready, because I was going through complete turmoil when all this was due. And I didn't want to quit the book. I just got permission to extend. And I wrote that chapter in a matter of 5 hours, from 11 p.m. until 4 a.m. the next morning. And that chapter is called Magic Mountains, the Highs and Lows of Life. God is greater than your highs and your lows. And what I have learned through all this therapy is we like to go to the mountaintops. We like to go to the peaks to feel God closer to us, where we can see him, because like we're up there, right? That's success for most people. We're on top of the mountain. We got the whole world by the palms of our hands under our feet, looking out into this entire kingdom that we have just conquered, right? But we can't stay there for very long, because there's always somebody chasing us, because the greatest threat to success is more success. So somebody's ready to knock us off the cliff if we're not willing to descend down the other side, which is always way faster because it's momentum. So people who are at the very top of the success mountain are the most vulnerable to the greatest collapse. And I had just hit my greatest peak just the fall before all this happened, when I was awarded Mastermind Trainer of the Year. And I didn't see it coming. And I'm living this amazing opportunity. And then I was like, okay, like, what now? Well, we got to keep going. Like, do we climb the same mountain twice, or do we climb a bigger mountain? Well, I got thrown off the mountain before I had a chance to descend. And what I'm going to tell you is, when we're in the depth of the next valley, which mine was, it was rock bottom. It was as bad, as low as it goes. That's where the seeds are planted. And that's where God comes to us, because we are not capable of going to God. So sometimes God puts us into those situations of being at rock bottom, because we have no other choice but to ask for help. And that's where he is there to help bring us back up. Because when you're at rock bottom, there's only one way, and it's up. Like, when you're already at the bottom, there's nowhere else to go but up. But in order to experience rock bottom, we have to remember that there are things of our past that we have to unload. We have to have a new team. We have to have new leadership. We have to break habits, start new habits. We have to start new processes. We have to have a new support group, because the group that led us to that mountain, that has been along the journey, is not capable of taking us on the next big mountain, because they've never experienced it. So we have to find people who gravitate towards us, that God puts on our crosswalk as at the moments that that happens. But we have to be willing to let go of people who no longer serve greater good for us, who truly bring out some of our bad. And that was my ex-husband. I had to let him go. Because it was, I was constantly questioning, doubting myself as to whether I was good enough to take this next big journey, which is so much bigger than me. It is truly giving pain relief to people across the globe in a cupping therapeutic system that I invented. And I knew I couldn't do it alone. But when I got somebody like tugging on me, and I'm looking for love and I can't feel it, like, you got to offload that. And you got to go where people truly take you exactly right where you're at. No judgment. They accept you right where you're at. And they're willing to carry you along, because they've already been on part of this journey. They've already got the expertise. They've already done the training. You know, it's like, you don't train for a Spartan beast with somebody who has not even done a sprint. Like, that's not smart. Like, you want to train for a sprint with somebody who's actually done the beast or the super, because they already know like where the weaknesses are. And then once you conquer that, now you join that team for the next big peak, or you repeat the sprint over and over again until you're bored with it, or until you're called to go to the next level. When we get too comfortable in life is when we start to go backwards. That's when doubt starts to kick in because we're bored. That's when we start looking for things we shouldn't be looking for. And I can do a lot of stuff I do right now in my sleep and not think twice about it. Like, I don't even have to think. It's just, I work under pressure so well. And it was like, okay, I've conquered this 10-year feat of being Mastermind Fit Pro of the Year. What's the next big thing? Like, you don't go backwards, right? We're trying to look for the next big thing. That's what got me into trouble. I was wanting to buy a Corvette. Actually, I didn't want to buy a Corvette. He wanted me to buy a Corvette. And that's how the affair entered into my life, was he drove a Corvette. So as crazy as that sounds, it was on my vision board. And that's what opened the door to vulnerability, as he figured out that was a vulnerability for me. I'm on this next big mountain and I can feel myself ascending. So my theme for 2025 is SOAR with greatness. And SOAR is an acronym. It is S-O-A-R. It is scripture and servant leadership. It's observation of others and listening a lot more. A is application of my gifts that God has given me in making a difference in others. And R is response, adapt, adjust, and pivot. And in doing that, we are not meant to fly. We're not meant to flap our wings. Soaring is being able to take yourself through flight to a level higher than we can even imagine, touching as high as where the heavens are. And that's what eagles do. Eagles soar. They don't fly. They soar. And so this is the year of being an eagle, high enough to touch the heavens, and really being able to look down at the duck pond and knowing that all the people, all the ducks that are making a lot of noise cannot come up to that level because they're not capable. We can go down and visit and try and inspire them to want more for themselves, but we got to get out because there's way more ducks at the duck pond where there's a lot of muck that they're weighting us down. And we need to be able to fly and soar because those wings are so much bigger. And that's what God wants us to do. So this is the year to soar with greatness.
Yeah, the ducks will make you quacky for sure. yeah, you know, so many things, so many great things you've said there. I just want to, for our listeners who may be, I don't know, shoveling the snow or whatever they're doing, the dishes. You know how you're always doing something when you're podcasting or listening to a podcast, right?
Absolutely.
So for our listeners that may have just been a little distracted and missed some of that, I just want to point out here that one of the things that you said was, if you want something different in your life, you got to get a different everything, right? Your best efforts, all of your best, and as successful and as gifted as you were, your best efforts left you miserable. And so when you wanted something different in your life, you had to get outside of yourself. You had to upgrade your circle. You had to change your habits. You had to reevaluate your faith, reevaluate, how am I interacting? What am I looking for? Am I trying to get something from a husband or from other people that can only come from God? You had to be willing to totally reevaluate. And I 100% agree with you that God, in acts of mercy, takes us down to the bottom of the muck in the muck pond, right? So that we will actually stop being so stubborn and holding on to everything we think's working great, so that we can reevaluate. And in our, you know, when we do get sick enough of the muck, we can actually start to make those changes. I love that. And another thing that you said, that it reminds me of what my dad says. He likes to talk about the difference between self-esteem and self-respect. And you alluded to it, but you know, self-esteem, you were feeling great. You had all this success and you were nailing it. And I know your business has been very successful for a long time. You were helping people, so it wasn't just about money. You had all those things clicking for you. You had Mastermind, Todd Durkin Mastermind Member of the Year, which, let me tell you, I know firsthand there's a lot of quality people in there. So that's a tremendous offer. And so even while feeling great about yourself, you can actually be the most destructive, Right. And so self-esteem, of course, we need to feel good about ourselves. But as my father says, we're more harmful with too much self-esteem, usually, than we are with too little. And there you were, high, feeling good, rocking it. And you were the most dangerous, you know, to yourself. And if we're chasing that self-esteem, we're not always using self-respect. Right. And those are the choices we have to make if we want to keep our self-esteem. Right. Are the respectful choices. I just love the passion and the raw honesty you're giving to us and our listeners today. This is beautiful.
Thank you. I want to contribute to what you shared with self-esteem and self-respect. I was just talking with a college student who was shadowing me today for she wanted to observe how I do what I do. And my last comment to her was, what is your greatest weakness? And she said, self-confidence. And I said, do you understand the difference between self-confidence and self-worth? Because that was what I learned by being the recipient of that award. And she said, no, I guess I don't. And I said, let me tell you what it is, because this has been an eye-opening lesson for me and I will never, ever forget it. Self-confidence comes from how everybody validates us based on when we're doing things right or if doing things in favor of their opinion, how it benefits them. So when we're getting along with people, people build us up, people compliment us. Oh, I love your shoes, or I love your outfit, or you have a great personality. We bounce how we feel inside of our own spirit, our own heart, a lot of times externally because of how people respond to us. And we just want to be loved. We want to be accepted. We don't want to be rejected. So we're willing to do whatever it takes to experience that positive feedback, which then builds confidence at the expense of us changing who we are. Self-worth is how we see ourselves in the mirror on our best day and on our worst day. And we still see an amazing spiritual being, knowing that we are deserving of so much greatness because we are God's child and God created us to be exactly right where we're at. And it doesn't matter what kind of confidence you have external from other people. If you have unstoppable self-worth, nobody can break you because that comes from God and that comes from within yourself. So that is what has gotten me through this past year. And in some of my darkest moments is looking at myself in the mirror and saying, look, God created you to be great and you are an image of God and God is perfect and you are not perfect. And you don't have to be perfect. You've screwed up. Yes, you did screw up. You learned from it. You'll never, ever do it again. So you don't ever have to admit that the rest of your life. But man, how are we going to pivot? What do we have to do to build ourselves back up so that even on our best day, we can still smile in the mirror like we are on our worst day and know that tomorrow is going to be an even better day because you've already survived your worst day. You're still here. You have survived your worst day. It's not as bad as what you think it is. And so how can we turn that around to enhance that self-worth, to knowing that you're worth it because nobody else believes in you right now? That's what happened to me. I had so many people that validated him and his last name, but nobody knew what had happened behind closed doors in our marriage. Everything looked honky-dory, but nobody knew I was silently suffering because we weren't talking about it. He didn't want me to be vocal about it. He still doesn't want me to be vocal about it. And when it comes down to self-worth, I still loved her in the mirror every single day, but I was battling head to head with somebody who was breaking my confidence by talking down to me and making me feel like I wasn't good enough unless I changed. But I had to remind myself, I had to leave my dream home. I had to leave a lot of money behind. And I still had to tell myself, yes, you're in a different home, but you're still living better than the way you grew up. You're still driving a vehicle better than what you grew up in. Like you're still working in a job. Like I had to look at my life through gratitude. Like what am I so grateful for on my worst day? And it's really not that bad because I still have my life. Like I'm still breathing. I'm still above ground. And that's self-worth. We are all deserving of that. But confidence was somewhat shattered because I was allowing an entire community who bled for his name to treat me like crap because of a decision I'd made. And how dare that I do that? So everybody was, I was the talk of the town with all the ducks, but I'm still an eagle. And I had to let my wings heal so I could continue to fly. But eagles have to stop and take a break too. They don't fly nonstop. But when they do take a break, they isolate. They don't go hang out at the duck pond in order to recharge. They go to their visit from time to time, but they isolate in order to refuel. And a lot of times they'll isolate in very small groups, usually pairs. And then they separate and go off into flight and go wherever they go. But self-worth is you are awesome, even on your worst day. And you are the only one who gets to choose whether your day is a winning day or a losing day. You are the only one who has control over that. And so even on my worst day, I still won my day because I'm still alive. I still bled into my faith and knowing that God still has a purpose for me, or I would have taken my life by now. And there are a lot of people who are silently suffering that. So you are the one that gets to choose whether you are winning or losing your day. And how you win your day is not defined by how many checkoff boxes are on your checkoff list. It's based on, like, I did that today. Just getting out of bed on a day where I could have stayed in bed all day and felt sorry for myself, that was a winning day because I got out of bed, you know? So all that has to be taken in consideration. But self-worth, if you have unbreakable self-worth, the self-confidence will come later from a new group of people building you back up.
Just to add on to this topic a little bit, I once heard that when temptation is greatest is when you're at the top of that mountain, when everything's going great. And on the reverse side, the flip side of things, it's when you hit that rock bottom point, you got nowhere else to turn but to God, right? And just kind of gives you a little bit of appreciation for when you hit those hard times. And so you talked a little bit about gratitude, but what are some examples of ways that you practice gratitude in your everyday life?
Oh my gosh. I tell you what, when you think you've got life bad, somebody's always got it worse. Mm-hmm. So on the days where I just had a lot of struggle to really be loving to myself and to be forgiving of myself, to let the guilt and let the shame go for, like I said, leaving my daughter in a home that I couldn't live in because it was the family farm. And that was the hardest part of all of it. It was, I've been a full-time hands-on mother to my beautiful girl for 14 years of her life. And now I only get her 50% of her life. And that sucks. Like, I don't get to see her every morning when she wakes up. I don't get to snuggle or tuck her in every night. I don't get to see her every day when she gets off the bus. I had to remember, you know, God gave me amazing gifts to be able to use for the greater good outside of me. And I started serving. I just started pouring in wherever I could. My definition of greatness is such as, greatness is not measured by what we have. It is not the success. It is not the house. It's not the money. It's not our friend group. It's not what we wear on our jersey, not the car we drive. It's not who we're married to or what road we live on. It's not our patents or our followers. Greatness is experienced by what we give and share of our gifts with others, because God wants us to give away our gifts, right? And as we give and share of ourselves to others, the more that energy comes back full circle, and it's usually when we least expect it, and most always when we need it the most. There are, like, phenomenal coincidences, miracles, as to how God circles that energy back around to you. And it's not a matter of keeping track. Like, greatness is not measured by keeping track, keeping a tally mark of, I do this, you do that. It's not equality. And it's not percentages. And it's not profound versus little. It is just allowing yourself to give. But we also have to be willing to receive. And when I thought about of how much energy I had given away, and at a time when I was desperately needing help, I had to learn how to receive. And so gratitude is truly being thankful for the people that came into my life that were clients that I had given a lot of energy to, and they stepped up to me and they said, hey, we're here to help. And I felt like, man, I don't want to ask for this help because they're a client. And they're like, no, you don't understand how many struggle snuggles you've given me. I want to give you a struggle snuggle back. And so they did. And I broke down crying and they let me. They accepted me. And so that's where the clientele became more of a connection in spirit through God, a friendship. And that's part of the new group going forward. So gratitude, having a job that provides me the opportunity to connect with people. I had a job, so I was able to make a living to be able to provide a home for my daughter to come and stay out with me on visitation hours. I had reliable transportation. My greatest anxiety a lot of times is not having good transportation, because I grew up with crap mobiles and was left stranded. And like, there's a lot of fear with that. So simple things, like I had the money to go to the fitness center to be able to watch and interact with people I've never met before in my life. And when I could see people moving who are disabled, okay, well, I'm filing for divorce and I'm going through this massive separation, this massive restructuring of myself. But man, I can walk. I couldn't walk 15 years ago. That person can barely walk and they're still moving and they're smiling. Why am I losing sleep over whether I'm going to make somebody else happy or not? So I had to look at life through the eyes of a different lens And the way to your spirit and to your soul is through your eyes. So I had to go looking at other people and celebrating other people for what they could do and how they were sharing their gifts, whether it affected me or not. I just had to go build other people up and say, hey, I hope that you're having a great day. You know, I'm proud of you for being here because I got to be a part of your day, but just by saying hi to you today. I mean, I've got a lot to be grateful for. I mean, I've got clients who are in a wheelchair, but there are a lot of children who are on respirators. You know, there are people who don't have a home. There are people who are desperately looking for a job. There are people who cannot come out of addiction to be able to have their sound mind. I had all of this, and I had to remember that it is just simplicity. SEE, it's an acronym. Simplify complex things, eliminate the crap, elevate your life. I was at rock bottom. I had to simplify this complexity of all these emotions. I have been threatened my life. Somebody's threatened to kill me. I had an affair. I left a life of 27 years with a man that I desperately loved and couldn't get the love back. Like, where does life go now, right? Okay, that's really complex. At the end of the day, when we lose everything we've got, what do we have left? People who are severely depressed or suicidal will say nothing. And at the end of the day, I still had me. The spirit is different. And I had to remember I will always have Amber. And I have got to continue to pour love into her in spirit. And the people who are meant to be in my life will show up. And so at the end of the day, when you lose it all, you still have you and you've got to grow that because that you is all, you're still here. You still have something to serve. So go serve. That's where the gratitude came in.
One of the things we like to ask guests as we kind of wrap up with our time is we may not be asking some of the right questions, or maybe there might be something on your heart that you really want to share with our listeners. If there's anything that you really feel as though we haven't really brought up yet that you is really on your heart to share, just to kind of let the listeners know what that is.
Yeah, absolutely. It comes down to control. We only have control over four things. And anything, so I mentally coach a lot of kids, a lot of teenagers, and I mentally coach a lot of adults. And this is a lesson that I learned from Damon West at a mastermind retreat in 2020 in Coronado. There are four things that we have control over and only those four things. And anything outside of those four things, it does not matter because you can't change it no matter how much you worry about it. We process anywhere from 60,000 to 70,000 thoughts a day. And over 40,000 of those for most people are negative. And we hormonally transition into our thoughts, which is a lot of inflammation, a lot of stress, which is what causes disease and autoimmune, and it causes pain. So simplify complex things by controlling the controllables. And we all have to have a set of non-negotiables that we are not willing to compromise no matter who is in our life or what circumstances are played into. We have control about what we think about. We have control about what we inflow into those thoughts. So our inflow must be greater than our outflow or we drown in the overflow. And our inflow is what we listen to, what we read, who we are who we are surrounding ourselves with, just music, social media, television, scripture, just all different quotes. That's our inflow. And if we're not pouring in heavy, way more than we think we need on our inflow, then we have no chance of surviving the outflow unless somebody picks us up and carries us and tries to help along with that process because we're not meant to be alone. We're not meant to suffer alone. So we have control over what we think about, how we inflow that information, what we say, and our actions of what we do. Thinking is an action. Thoughts is a noun. The root cause of all pain and suffering is thinking. Our thoughts actually happen in a natural state of being in silence of nothing at all. But we start thinking and doubting those thoughts based off of how other people are going to bounce the ideas or the response. So when you are sitting in a space where there's nothing and you have no process of thinking, you can't think of the right thing, you can't do the right thing, and you get trumped, like, okay, maybe we start doubting ourselves. Silence creates the thoughts. It's the thinking that causes the problem. And that is an action, which we actually have control over. So I just want to, you know, I tell this with a lot of depressed teenagers and adults. We outthink ourselves a lot. And so when we need to reprogram, kind of recalibrate, reboot, regenerate, hit the reset button, that's when we go to God in silence. And that's what separating and that's what divorce did for me, was it gave me silence to be able to figure out what the heck I'm supposed to do with my life to be able to serve God on a much bigger scale than what I had already conquered, because I already knew I had more greatness left in me. I just didn't know where I was supposed to turn and go. And I needed the silence and the lack of doubt in order to be able to do that. So You know, fire your energy vampires. If people are sucking the life out of you, you've got to have non-negotiables. I have had a lot of trauma in my life associated with alcohol. I have never had a problem with alcohol. I've never sought alcohol to cope with my pain, but a lot of people do. And most of the men who have been in my life in my past, including my ex-husband, my father, my grandpa, other abusers who have hurt me, who have violated me, alcohol is the common denominator in every one of them. So one of my non-negotiables is I will not enter into another long, serious relationship where alcohol isn't involved. Now, I can socially drink. I don't have a problem with having a social drink and engaging in a social experience where there's, you know, a glass of wine or a cocktail involved. But for people who drink 5 to 7 days a week, drink alcohol 5 to 7 days a week, what I want people to remember is as we get older, our body does not recover, regenerate at the same pace as what it does when we are younger. And for every alcoholic beverage that we consume, on a molecular level, it stays in our connective tissue for a minimum of 48 hours, even though the lasting effects are already gone. The molecules actually stay in the human body for 48 hours per beverage, which means your brain and your body are not recovering, not restoring, which is changing your hormones and is changing the electrical highways, which is changing your thought process. So I had to learn how to get away from that because alcohol has been part of my marriage, my entire relationship.
Wow, Amber, it has just been truly a pleasure to sit down with you and talk about all this. We really didn't even divulge into completely your practice. The listeners can tell you're just full of so much wisdom and knowledge. And so if someone is interested in working with you, what is the best way to get this deep depth of knowledge out of you?
So there's a couple of different ways. I'm known for magic, M-A-G-I-K. Magic, I think we might have mentioned this in the first podcast episode, is motivation, acceptance, greatness, gifts, inspiration, and kindness. So M-A-G-I-K. My website is kksmagik.com. So KKS Magic. My business name is Kivit Kinetic Solutions. kksmagic.com, or just shoot me a text message. If you email me, I get so many emails, like hundreds of emails a day. So the absolute fastest way to get a hold of me is through social media via Messenger. Amber, H-A-R-D-I-N is my maiden name. Kivit is my branded name, K-I-V-E-T-T. So Amber Harden Kivit. And my phone number, I give this out loud and people think I'm nuts, but it is for somebody who is silently suffering. It might take me a while to get back on a response, but I never neglect the messages that come through. It just takes me a while. 317-446-7971. And I actually have a jingle for that. 317-446-7971. So text me. Email is the last resort. Social media. Yeah, there's multiple ways to get to me, but you might have to go through my gatekeeper to actually talk to me on the phone.
I tell you, if anybody's listening to this, and I know, you know, we've only over the two episodes been talking less than 2 hours, but anybody's been listening to this, they have to know this is a very special person that we had the pleasure to interview with. And you, I mean, and if they somehow missed that in all of this, I mean, we talked about you being, if there were a Resilience Hall of Fame, you'd be in it. But if they somehow missed that, what person with your level of connection, or really just anybody, is going to give out their number in a public forum? It shows just how dedicated you are to everything you're saying. You are a tremendously different person who really believes the things you're saying and putting it into practice. And we're just so glad that you have given us and our listeners a little bit of what you have to offer the world. Thank you so much, Miss Amber, for being with us.
Well, thank you guys so much. It is truly an honor and a pleasure to be able to serve your community and to be a part of your culture and to experience you guys live in person with the hugs that we have shared over the last several years. I can't imagine any other way to win my day today. Is with you as part of my team.
Season 3 of Ricardo's Rules of Resilience podcast is brought to you by Triple R Nutrition. Triple R Nutrition offers you top-of-the-line supplements while supporting a worthy cause. Triple R Nutrition is partnered with Wired and Vision in El Salvador So part of their proceeds go towards helping support their mission in El Salvador. So you can make sure that you're maximizing your potential while supporting a worthy cause. Go check them out.